Welcome to another Women of Letters podcast. I'm Amy, also known as Sweet Ondine, and here's my travelling companion, Jules.
Well, we're sort of tag team travelling. Yes, it's Jules here from the Super Wiki. I've just got back from a couple of weeks away in LA and Vancouver. Surprisingly unsupernatural related, I'd actually gone to LA for a Doctor Who convention, which made me feel like I was stepping out on my true love. But
cheater.
There were some supernatural encounters along the way. And Amy will be off to Vegas for the marathon four-day Vegas con that kicks off the supernatural convention circuit for the year in, is it how many days now, Amy?
Yeah, one moment, please, while I just check my countdown. No, it's oh, I don't know, it's about 11, I think, about 11 days. I can tell you accurately. Here we go. Oh, my God, it's 10 days. 10 days till it starts, 9 days till I go.
Fantastic.
Woo-hoo, but who's counting?
So, yes, we're not travelling companions at this point, but we will have lots to hear from Amy when she gets back, if she hopefully survives.
4 days.
Vegas Con. So we've been on a bit of a hiatus, as has the show. So we're going to pick up because we thought we'll just pick up straight away with this week's episode, Captives, which was written by Bob Behrens and directed by Supernatural's art director, Jerry Wanek. Amy, what did you think of Captives?
I very much enjoyed Captives, actually. I always hate it when people say that to me. That's good, actually. I mean, what do you mean, actually? I really enjoyed it. I thought it was solid episode. I thought the new mythology around heaven and the souls was totally interesting and opened up a whole lot of questions. And I really loved getting a little bit of Castiel's backstory and finding out he was always a bit of a rebel, and but finding out he was a bit of a legend as well. I thought that was all really cool, and I was, you know, just I was happy to get at the trans story kind of rounded out, which I'm often a bit disappointed when those things are left hanging in the air. So I was happy to sort of see that kind of come to closure, or, you know, and yeah, weirdly I even enjoyed all the boys' interactions because that's the kind of person I am. But no, I thought it was a good one. It went fast, very, very, very fast. It was one of those hour episodes that go vroom through and you go, you're crazy, is it finished already? So yeah, what about you?
Oh, look, I loved it. I thought it started off fantastically, having the teaser be the actual, set in the bunker. Of course, we start off with Emo Dean. Sorry, I'm going to be a bit mean to Dean here, Amy. Emo Dean listening to Adele. I mean, Billy Squire's lonely. Lonely is the night.
Oh, bless him.
Is the Dean Winchester version, yes, of listening to Adele on My Chemical Romance or something, I think. I'm not making light of Dean's man pain, but
he does look epically good when he's in pain, though.
The question is, what was Sam off doing in his bedroom? I think he was probably off. My theory is jerking off to old TED Talks or something.
Oh. Brandon.
Because he's a cause
which
he's a
particular
nerd.
Ones?
I don't know. He's a nerd.
I was like, he was reading.
No. Sorry, I should let everyone know I have had quite a bit of cold medication and some bourbon today, so that's my excuse for anything that gets said. But wonderful teaser, and
I love the teaser. I think that was one of my favorite teasers I think ever. It was like a little mini horror movie. It was so cool. It was all those things that happen in horror movies, the lights, and which, I mean, happen in Supernatural as well. But, you know, like with somebody who's got their earphones on and can't hear the ghosty stuff going on outside. And, you know, it was so cool. I loved it. I thought it was great.
And wonderful that, you know, I think writer Bob Behrens said, you know, he'd written that before he knew who was directing. But, of course, we got Jerry Wanek getting to direct a wonderful opening scene set on the set he designed. So he both, it really got to highlight the gorgeousness of the bunker.
Oh, it looked beautiful.
And see, you know, a bit more of the layout, and, you know, I think any time we get to see that. And it also made me think, I'm sure I wasn't alone with wondering how things were going to go when the boys sort of moved into the bunker and had this, you know, for the first time sort of a stable home, one that's actually theirs, not just lying and sleeping in Bobby's lounge room or hanging out in Rufus's cabin. And I did have a thought that particularly with this storyline of the boys being estranged at the moment, it works very well because it gives them, for one thing, it gives them separate bedrooms. So it gives them space to be apart while they're together, which they wouldn't have had if they were, as per earlier seasons, you know, in motel rooms all the time. Obviously, they're still doing that, but we can see them in this sort of domestic setting, if you like, but being separated. So I thought it works well for the narrative on that level too. And we've also seen that we have the workspace, which is sort of in the library, and then we've had the more domestic scenes of the boys in the kitchen. So I was just reflecting in amongst the wonderful little horror movie we had as a teaser, how well that set has worked for the boys' narrative this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought that as well. I thought it's interesting that in past seasons where they've been butting heads, it didn't really matter. They were thrown into small confined spaces together, constantly, cars and motels. But here they were in a situation where they literally could get away from each other if they wanted to, and there was heaps of space to do it. You know, there's, you know, whether they go to their room or, to sulk, or, whether they, you know, shoot a few rounds firing range, or go to that, steam room that we're all hoping that they have and we get to see later. but yeah, they've actually got space to get away from each other, so it's kind of working for them in the sense that it's working that if they don't want to be next to each other, they don't have to be next to each other, but it's kind of working against them because they can actually get the hell away from each other, which they've never really been able to do before.
No, which I think's possibly been part of the problem as well.
Which has probably been part of the problem, yeah, because it's just forced them to keep going and going without actually having to dealing.
Yeah, and it also serves the story in that way that we know that, you know, we can't have the boys, you know, we couldn't have the boys be separated in terms of, you know, in different parts of the country for any length of time. And we've had, you know, we did have them separate for a couple of episodes this season. But this, again, serves to keep that distance between them continuing even while they're, you know, they are in the same place, if you like. Mm-hmm. So then, of course, we get the, you know, I love it, and it ends with Dean going, yep, bunker's haunted.
It was such a beautiful off-the-cuff delivery as well. So good. And it was just, yeah, that whole, I just loved it. That whole scene was just delicious. But, yeah, bunker's haunted. Awesome.
And did you have any, now, of course, we can't go past mentioning the appalling CHCH promo, which revealed that Kevin was the ghost.
Unbelievable.
And
haven't we spoken about this before, Jules?
Well, we have.
We've reprimanded the CW before.
I think it was the CW who revealed Garth's a werewolf. And as someone who works in making promos, Amy, you would know that there's probably a few little rules you should go by, one of which is not giving away the big reveal of the episode.
No, and, like, there's certainly ways to tease that. Where you wouldn't have actually given away it, but you would have implied it. You know, there's certainly that they could have made a promo where they didn't show Kevin Tran, but there was an implication that it was someone they knew, or, you know, whatever. It's a promo, man. You can write what you want. But I say that in my out loud voice? Shut up. I just get the secret.
But it's like with the Garth episode. They could have shown Garth being all aggro on the verge of turning to werewolf. In two frames, which would have teased, oh my God, without actually, you know, having Garth standing there going, I'm a werewolf.
Yeah.
So Obviously, they need your skills over there in Canada and the US, Amy.
That was just, I was so pissed off. I was writing caps locks everywhere. I was so pissed off with that promo. So, yeah, I was spoiled. I mean, I guess when we first saw the promo that indicated that Bunker was going to be haunted, we all thought it was probably going to be Kevin because who else would it be? And then I think there was a scene in a promo which any of us who grabbed a screen cap from, and I was one of those people, sort of mulled around the fact that we thought it could have been Mrs. Tran because it kind of looked like her, and you know that. And then if it was Kevin, that would make sense. So I think, but then I would have still been, woo, I was right, I was surprised. You know what I mean? I still would have been surprised without just going, ah, nuts. I even know when he shows up. It's going to be so that was massively disappointing. But I thought it was very interesting how they got to deciding it was Kevin, you know, like, and it was interesting to see Dean vehemently going, no, 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 it can't be Kevin. And I think that was just him not desperately not wanting it to be Kevin.
The first part of that conversation, it really is the elephant in the room, isn't
it? Because Sam's kind of like, well, it could be one of the men of letters. He's kind of like,
which is not unlikely either. Yes, it was that uncomfortable moment, and of course of bringing up something which obviously hasn't, isn't easy for either of them to talk about for various obvious reasons. Then we have wonderful Kevin communicating via coffee percolator, which was just gorgeous.
I love that they sat there watching it.
Yeah.
A watch pot, but I just loved it. Them sitting there going, "Da da da," waiting for the thing to go ding. It was beautiful.
Except then Dean decides he's not going to talk to the coffee maker, but to talk to Kevin. So, what did you think of Dean's speech to Kevin before he appears?
I'm sure he has said that speech 400 times in his head at least. Before, and I mean, he's basically saying the same thing that he keeps saying to Sam, you know, it's on him. And I thought it was, it just was sounded like Dean to me, but it was something I think he'd probably said over and over again. And he, you know, obviously feels like complete crap about the whole thing, because I thought he was almost going to say it at the end, like, I should have. He said, I should have, and then he put his hand over his face, and then Kevin came. But I thought he was actually going to say, I should have told you about the angel, because that's basically what, you know, is.
I should have told you, I should have trusted in you, I should have done a lot of things. I love that actually, though, that when Kevin does appear, he actually calls Dean on, God, I had to sit through enough of these self-pitying speeches when I was alive.
Oh, I thought that I thought, but, you know, being so in love with Dean, I thought that was a little bit harsh on Kevin. But then I was like, hey, he's in the valley, he's allowed to be snarky. But I thought that was I did actually think that was a little harsh. I thought, oh come on, man, you know, like, yeah, I didn't actually see Dean as having a pity party in that moment. I saw him as, you know, we've seen him reach out and talk to nobody before, and you know, he's done it with Cass, and he's done it before Bobby, I think, didn't he do it with Bobby? And, you know, I thought that was a little bit harsh, and I thought, oh, come on, you know, the guy was trying to say something and he's not great at it, and, you know, he feels like shit, and sure, he's probably wallowing like crazy in it because that's what he does, but, yeah, anyway, thought that was a bit mean. But he was in the veil and dead, and he's allowed to be cranky. He's allowed to. I'll let Kevin be cranky.
I did think it actually got me thinking, though, because as we've all been thinking a lot about the state of mind and the state of the boys' relationship, though, but because I was thinking, you know, we often use this term, you know, about people being self-pitying, and it made me think, well, what's wrong with that? You know, if something terrible's happened to you, or something you've been involved with had a terrible outcome, and I suppose maybe. And this might be overthinking it a bit much, but that it hones into something maybe that about a lack of not quite a lack of responsibility, but that there is something of Dean feeling hopeless might be part of it. That, you know, how was he to know that this is how things were going to play out and that? And I think maybe just going back to the stuff with Sam is that the part of the difficulty is for Sam, maybe Dean's lack of self-reflection or analysis on why these things keep happening, which is not about blame, but it is about perhaps owning your part in it. And, you know, Dean's thing of like, I'll always, you know, I don't have it in me not to save Sam. Well, Sam's, I think part of Sam's frustration comes from Dean's unwillingness to sort of unpack that and see things from Sam's point of view. Now, that's probably entirely overthinking Jed Kevin's little line about a pity party, but I do think there's something there in that Dean, you know, Dean thinks, wants things to be better, and I don't think he quite knows, and I don't think Sam knows either, how to unpack his own role in these things. And I think Sam's actually in exactly the same position, because if they did know, then they'd have fixed it by now. Anyway, that's probably going far too over the top with that one comment, and I do think Kevin can be as cranky as he likes because he's
dead. He can, and I'll give him that. But I mean, I do see what you're saying on that one, but I actually also saw it as like, He hasn't had any opportunity either to discuss this with anybody. Not that he's great at discussing. Well, actually, he does talk to people sometimes. Sometimes he does talk, but he hasn't got anybody to talk to at all about this, what has happened. And, you know, except, you know, like right back at the beginning when he spoke to Cass, but that was all about saving Sam and getting rid of Gadriel. But, you know, since then, he's just been wearing this horrible guilt, which, yeah, he's probably feeling a little bit of self-pity about as well, that he feels shitty about it, that guilt, and then the guilt that Sam's also added onto his pile with, you know, how bad he feels about Sam, but also what Sam's saying, and he hasn't got anybody to communicate that with. So, you know, I kind of give him a little bit of grace in allowing him to try and work these things out verbally, because who's he gonna say it to except the space? Because there's no one to listen to him.
I don't have an issue with that side of it, but I think what I'm picking up from Kevin was perhaps picking up on something around Dean's seeing himself as a victim in this. Now, we can argue about, in the big picture, in a way they're all victims, but also a helplessness on Dean's part. But, you know, there's something in there, and this isn't just a being mean to Dean thing, but, you know, yeah, Kevin's dead, and, you know, Sam was the one who got possessed by the angel, and yet there's something about perhaps those points of view would then see Dean's feelings about himself as, you know, being self-pitying, I think. So it's like, well, you know, you have to own this, you have to take responsibility. If you're going to move ahead with this, it's not enough to say, well, it's not enough just to feel sorry. But anyway, that's, as I said, that's taking one little comment probably far too far. But then we do have, of course, the reveal of the whole new thing that we hadn't known before, although a lot of people have suspected, is that heaven really is shut to everyone.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, as you say, I think we all kind of figured that there was a possibility, because Metatron seemed to want that joint for himself, that he wouldn't want a whole lot of souls going out there. Though, I don't know, you know, he also wants to be God, so that would have given him the opportunity to be all godlike around all the brand new souls.
I would assume he's got the people,
existing souls
habiting there when he moved in.
Yeah, but he's got it on lockdown, which, you know, then kind of I started thinking, well, then it's probably a bloody good thing they didn't close the gates of hell too then, because then we'd have, like, how crowded would the Vale be? And you'd have, like, all the bad people and the good people in the Vale all together, and all the, you know, so it's actually probably a good thing that one door's open at least to get some people through, to move some dead people through.
I think from a storytelling point of view, it's a good addition, because it ups the ante as to why opening heaven again and fighting Metatron is more than just a philosophical thing.
It becomes personal. Angels.
Yeah, well, it becomes something as humans we're invested in, because obviously we know what happens to spirits who are stuck within the veil for a long time. They go mad and become, you know, crazy spirits and do terrible things. So, you know, create a lot of work for hunters. So I think that's it was a good reveal on that level, because it's more than just about the angels going home, which I certainly care about, because and I think again this episode was a great one for letting us see, you know, some other angels who we haven't seen as much so far, which were the so-called penitents, who are those who have been trying to sort of, you know, get on as best as they can on Earth and not do bad things, yet they're being wiped out preemptively by Bartholomew and presumably Malachi as well, to because they're seen as potentially, you know, hampering the war against Metatron, the return to heaven. So, yes, I loved finding out that Bartholomew and Cass had known each other and that they had, you know, history together. And I love Cass's storyline and evolution this season, because he's gone from being stripped of everything and being human, and now that he's being an angel again, he's taken what he, you know, as we saw with his discussion with Sam the previous week, that he's, you know, he's kept a lot of what he learnt and felt and experienced as a human now. So he is seeing things in a different way, but it's still not, again, still not easy. It's not like he's gone, oh, I know exactly what I'm going to do now, because obviously there's it's not clear what's, you know, he wants to battle Metatron, but on the same hand, you know, Bartholomew's obviously not the sort of person you really want to be working with, because he kills people a lot.
Both really. I really like Cass this season. Cass's story this season, I think this has been the most engaging Castiel story probably since we first met him. And I really like who he's becoming. And you know, as you say, this, he's still got this real, he seems to have recovered that really strong angel kind of warrior thing that he had when we first met him, and that strength. But he's kept all the lessons, good and bad, that he's learnt through being human, and I think also his contact with the most human of humans, and it's made him into, or it's making him into, this very interesting character, and I'm enjoying seeing where his particular storyline is going. And like, I think we all feel like it's a redemption arc for Castiel, because he keeps referencing, you know, what he did in the past, and you know, even when he was speaking at Rebecca's grave, you know, wish he could change what he had done and all the damage that he did when he was, you know, killing lots of angels and really, really started a lot of the mess that's happening. Not in the least, you know, trusting Metatron and all that kind of stuff. But I think it's a really interesting arc for Castiel. I have to say, though, I still feel really disengaged with the whole angel war thing. When we we just keep getting all these angels that we only see for 32 seconds, and I can't connect with any of them. I mean, even Bartholomew, to a degree, he was he was really creepy, and I think the actor, Adam Harrington, I think his name is, did a great job at being creepy ass as all hell. But I didn't really get a sense of who he was beyond being just, you know, really nasty. And so I didn't really care when he got his comeuppance, because it was just like, oh good, you know, can we get past that guy now? And all the other angels, because we're not getting to know anybody, I feel like it really needs to be anchored in Metatron and Gadriel, who we do have an emotional connection to, good and bad, or mostly bad, and Cass. And so, you know, that way there is, we have much more emotionally, we're much more emotionally invested in the story. Yeah. And I find it really hard when we have episodes like this. I loved Cass, and I loved finding out all about Cass's backstory, and I loved how he then took control of the situation and knew what he was going to end up doing, and you know, and then we want to follow you and realizing that, oh, maybe Cass is going to become the leader that, you know, recovers heaven and gets rid of Metatron and all that kind of stuff and brings the angels back to what they should be, you know, really, a bit nicer than what they are. And that's possibly also a problem. They're always shown as such complete dicks that it's really hard to connect to them. But that I find all really intriguing and interesting, and I hope now that that's going to loop around and bring us back into a more emotional connection to the story. Because when we have these episodes where we just get all these little angels popping up and we get a lot of this angel talk about the war, I really find it very hard to engage to. And I had the same trouble with the Raphael War and the weapons of mass destruction. I think a lot of it goes on off screen and then is sort of told to us by characters that we don't know. And so it feels hard to connect. So I'm hoping that now we've kind of got rid of that Bartholomew guy and we know that Castiel is going to be the great leader, hopefully, that we can loop this back into connect, at least for me, that I can feel connected to it emotionally, because I really love the angels and I love what they've brought to the show, and I want to sort of feel a little bit more involved in that story than I currently do.
Yeah, I think for me it's all about Cass, really. So I'm less concerned, and I agree, and it is difficult with this sort of, if you like, B storyline in Supernatural to give it, you know, it's not the main story, certainly in this season. So, you know, we can only get slices of it. But for me, this was about, you know, Castiel finding a way forward. And so we know he's tried some ways in the past that have been not good. And he's obviously learned from that. But still, even here, I was interested, and you said before about the, you know, the things both good and bad that he's learned. You know, unfortunately, he's having the Winchesters, and particularly Dean, as his entree into humanity, aren't necessarily. He's learned some things that are possibly less than good, he stands by watching Bartholomew torture a liar, the penitent that Cass has met at the funeral of the other angel, Rebecca, at the beginning of the episode, and that, you know, Cass doesn't intervene to stop that. That, you know, there is a rationale that he can see that, you know, finding out that information might be relevant, but he does stop, draw the line at killing him until Bartholomew does kill him. But then, and Cass, you know, Cass does, you know, act very strongly to try and stop that. And then refuses to kill Bartholomew right up until the point where he does. And it just made me reflect that, you know, Cass really has taken on, you know, what I see really is also the Winchester's moral murkiness, you know, often they have to do things because of circumstance and they're always trying to balance, you know, the bigger picture against the immediate and all that sort of stuff. And there are no clear guidelines, if you like, anymore. But it's also disturbing that, you know, we have characters, all of them, who, you know, Dean, Sam and Cass, who will stand by and either torture or watch someone be tortured because they see the outcome will be for the greater good.
But I think that's also what's very interesting about Castiel's story, is not just that we know, and I 100% agree, you know, he has learnt humanity from the most extreme humans who have, you know, crazy situations to have to deal with and really react in ways that maybe not the rest of the world may not do. But it's interesting how it's really brought the three characters in line and how Cass's story is so very similar to the brother's story now, in trying to find his way forward in, you know, a very morally murky environment to find the best way to get the best outcome, even though he knows he's failed and made terrible errors in the past. He's still trying to make a good choice and do the right thing, and not knowing which way to go forward, but still going forward because that's what he has to do. And I think it's really interesting that Cass's story has become essentially a reflection of the brother's story as well, and you know how he is dealing with everything is how they deal with everything. But it's really, both of their worlds are so extreme, and how else can you do it? But I think that has been a really interesting thing in Cass, in that he has really become a very, very similar to them in many ways.
Well, yes, and I have to say I had a huge heart clench at the end there, where, you know, the angels approach him and basically say, we think you could be the leader we need. I mean, I found that incredibly moving, and, you know, for Cass to have, which we've never seen before, you know, I think people, angels followed him out of fear or out of other things, but, you know, to have these angels see something in Cass as a leader, I find both exciting and sort of moving, and something, you know, to be honest, he's not getting from the Winchesters at the moment, because they've, you know, they've got a hell of a lot on their plates as well. And I really like that. I'm excited to see where we go next with, you know, Cass taking on Metatron and Gadriel, and I'll be interested. You know, I think Gadriel's, as you and I have talked about before, you know, is not like Metatron. I don't think he is. He's irrevocably, you know, evil or anything, that he's been acting out of self-interest and self-preservation, and I wouldn't be at all surprised to see him, you know, following Cass in the end even.
Yeah. Could be awkward. A little awkward.
But to get back though to
kind of digress to the whole other side of the story there. But I actually agree. I was like, oh yay, people are actually going to put their trust in Cass. And I just, his face, it must have, for him to have something like that after, you know, everything that he's done, and so many angels who've been on his heels to kill him because of everything that he's done in the past to heaven and to the angels, to have angels turn around and go, we actually think that you're the best choice and that you may be the strongest leader here to bring us back to what we should be and, you know, get us home. I thought, I was the same. I was like, oh, that's really good, you know,
he's not out of the waters yet, obviously. Oh God, no. I mean, there's no clear path, you know, he has to find Metatron, how he battles Metatron to reopen heaven, and these things don't necessarily get easier just because you have followers, as we know from Cass's previous experiences. So but I think it's really exciting, and I was like yay, Cass, someone's on the side, and in a way it's a reflection or a mirror of the sort of forgiveness that we saw Kevin give to Sam later in the episode, where he's, you know, he says, you know, you were possessed by Gadriel when you killed me, it wasn't you, which I think was a hugely important thing for Sam to hear from Kevin.
If he heard it.
Yes, well. and I think in a way, it was, as you said, it was Cass sort of having these angels put trust in him, is part of him forgiving himself, perhaps, for what he did in the past. Now, whether he should be forgiving himself or not is another matter. But and the same with Sam, you know, Sam and the Gadriel situation, and, you know, none of these things are clear, which is what makes it interesting.
Because I know. We don't get any clear answers, and that's what makes it interesting. It's like what that tweet that you tweeted out the other day, and I was just like, yeah, because we don't, it's, nothing is fed to us as a crystal clear answer. This is right, this is wrong, this is, you know, this is how it's going to be and how it's going to end. Everything's kind of open to interpretation. It's all grey and murky, and everybody's good, but they're doing bad things, but it's for the best reasons, and, you know, but, you know, it's going to go pear-shaped, and it's all so murky. Everybody's doing is always such a mess, and, you know, I think even for us, it's hard sometimes to navigate through along with them to sort of know whether we think what they're doing is the right thing or the wrong thing, or it's, you know, it's also grey. The Winchester's world is so grey and in more ways than one.
So Amy's referring to, I did tweet out in a slight bit of frustration because I read, not that I ever tweet in frustration, a lot of fans wanting the conflict in the brothers' relationship to be resolved now. And I was saying that I thought the desire for that resolution actually shows that the writing's good, because it's difficult and uncomfortable for us to see the boys like this. And I loved through this episode how, you know, there's this continual snarking at each other and you know, it's like, I always say it's like sand in your underpants, you know, it's
irritating.
Yeah, they're both at each other in that really sort of, you know, passive-aggressive sort of way that, you know, that, you know, they're not, you know, they're not like when they're, you know, getting on well. So, but, you know, I find that fans sometimes don't realise that, you know, your desire for resolution, there's two things. One, I think if you wrapped up, as Supernatural itself said back in Changing Channels, you know, gee, it'd be nice if life was wrapped up, you know, like a TV show in every 44 minutes. But also, who wants a TV show that does that, except perhaps, you know, you can go and watch, you know, a police procedural.
Law and Order or something,
go
yeah.
Go and watch your procedural. And who wants NCIS Supernatural? And I think, you know, to have that ongoing tension and lack of resolution, it creates this desire, you know, it creates feelings in the viewer, which I think, you know, can be difficult and frustrating. But the very fact that we're feeling that is a good thing.
Exactly.
And that I also don't want to show, and, you know, it's one thing I've always loved, as we've just been, you know, talking about for the last 20 minutes, the ambiguity and openness to interpretation of everything in the show. I don't want a show that tells me how to feel. I don't want to be told that, you know, Sam's right and Dean's wrong, or, you know, Cass is this, or, you know, and I don't want that to be resolved every, you know, conflict to be resolved every episode, because, you know, it's, you know, yes, if I want that out of a show, there are other shows I can go and watch, but I want a show that makes me want to make podcasts about it and write thousands of words of meta, because I'm not sure. I have to work through this stuff myself. It's engaging me. It's making me think, how would I fix a relationship if it was in the situation that Sam and Dean's in? You know, what would I do if I was, you know, Castiel and I'm trying to solve, you know, which path to go down? They're the things that the show challenges us to engage with and answer. And so I sort of, it's funny, I think, that sometimes fans don't realise that the things they're feeling are the things the writers want you to feel. Mm-hmm. They want you to want the boys to get back together, but they don't want to give you that, because that's no fun at all.
Well, they don't want to give it to you easily anyway. They want us to work for it as much as the Winchesters have to work for it.
You know,
because I agree. It's painful to watch. It's like you sit there every week and go, oh, guys, come on, man, just, you know. But I don't want them just to hug it out and moving right along and, you know, fix their relationship in an episode and then where we, because, one, that's not the show that I watch. I want a show that challenges me, and Supernatural challenges me on all sorts of levels, emotionally and intellectually and, you know, with my anger, and anger management challenges, and you know, I really enjoy that about that. And the fact that this story is not resolving easily and is not resolving in an episode and is not resolving with a come on, let's just hug it out, is feels really real and is really compelling to me. It makes me want to keep talking about it and thinking about it, and once I want to tune in next week to see what catastrophic error they're going to make in their relationship next week, or are they going to sort it out? Oh my God, you know. And yeah, I think it's very compelling writing, and it's frustrating, and it can make you angry. But that's exactly what, you know, we watch television and we watch these shows for emotional engagement. Otherwise, you know, what are we watching? You know, that's why we do it. So I agree with you. I think it's really good writing that gets us so hot and bothered in this way.
And thank you, Bob Behrens, for making us all hot and bothered.
Woo, yes. Thanks for that.
We must get back to talking about, I mean, yes. One of the big reveals of the episode that wasn't spoiled by a stupid promo was the return of Lauren Tom as Linda Tran. And I think, you know, have to agree, the amazing performance of her here. And again, another minor character that we've seen a great arc of over a number of seasons. And, you know, her portrayal of a woman who's been kidnapped, tortured, finally gets rescued only to find out her son's is dead, was absolutely, you know, it was heartbreaking and intense and just amazing.
She did just an amazing job. She was just, gosh, she was so on the money with everything in that performance. And the moment when she found out that Kevin, when Sam silently told her about Kevin, was just, I mean, I just sat there and cried, because I was just like, that is just, it was so well done. You know, no words were needed. She understood Sam's face and the, when he held her hand, and I just loved how she reacted to that. I thought it was really real. And then it was even so powerful when she saw Kevin and, you know, just, you know, saying son. And it was, I thought she was amazing. I thought she did an amazing job. It must have been a very difficult emotional end to that character, or we assume it's the end of that character, you know, that, for her to do it must have been terribly emotional, however many days she was on set doing that. And she just did a wonderful job. And I was, like I said, I was really happy to have that storyline rounded out, because we'd had conflicting information from Crowley and from Mark Shepherd, actually, who was always, who also liked to pontificate about whether she was alive or dead. And for me, it was
Crowley lies.
And he does, man. And I just felt really good to actually get that one answered. I thought that was a good thing to get answered. I would have probably, I don't know that I would have thought about it very much, but it would have been one of those things where you go, I wonder what ever happened if that character was really dead or alive. So, and it was a really nice arc for Kevin as well, because we never really got to have that emotional farewell for Kevin either, because he was just, you know, fried and we were all just devastated. And so just to have the Trans reunited in that way, for Kevin to have saved her, which is also an interesting thing, because had Kevin have not died, then Mrs. Tran may never have been found, which is puts an interesting twist on that as well. But yeah, I thought it was a lovely rounding out to their story. I really enjoyed every aspect of it.
Yeah, I hope we see more of Linda Tran, because yeah, you know, she proved herself to be, you know, an amazingly strong and capable woman throughout, and with humour throughout all the episodes, you know, that we saw her in. And it brought back a lot of my grief over losing Kevin in this episode. And something I'm, you know, sort of still not over, I don't think.
Me neither. I'm still shocked that they did that.
Yeah, it was a horrible way for him to die, and, you know, and a good reminder to us of the cost, and I think a reminder to Sam and Dean of the cost of what they do. So, yeah, I think it provided some closure, but also hope, you know, hope some opening too, because I would love to see her back again. But yeah, I loved, and you know, again, just to comment briefly, I thought Jerry Wannick's directing was fantastic throughout this, and we had some wonderful, you know, the thing that always stand out to me, and particularly the great horror moments that we've talked about, the teaser. We had the sort of flashback of Candy, who we saw her time when she was incarcerated and escaped. And, you know, I thought all that directing was so intense and really wonderful work by Jerry. And then we had also some wonderful sort of with when Cass gets abducted in the cemetery.
Oh, that was a beautiful shot.
With the huge urns on either side. But, you know, a great episode in it was both a, you know, a great horror movie episode, but also quite an intense, an intimate and emotional episode, because we do have, then have that scene with, as you rightly said, with Jared and Lauren, where, you know, it's almost it's a non-verbal part of it that, you know, conveys the intensity of emotion there. And I think, you know, both Jared and Lauren did, you know, incredible work in conveying that. And then, of course, because it's supernatural, we then have the gorgeous contrast of Jensen with the actor who played Del the demon, which was blackly hilarious as well.
It's just hilarious. I love, talk about monologue as well. My God, he went off, but that was... yeah, that was a pretty funny scene, I have to say. I'm sorry, I can't actually go any further in this scene without talking about their clothes in this scene, because I'm going to have to actually mention how GQ they were looking in when they FBI'd up, because goodness me, Dean in his dress shoes and everything, dress boots. But yeah, there was totally different kind of vibe going on. And how gruesome was it when Dean, like, opens his eyes and the first thing he sees is the other storage worker with his throat cut just draining into that bowl? I was like, oh, my God. And he didn't even blink. Like, I just went, look at that, Dean Winchester. He didn't even, like, go, whoa. And there was no kind of recognition of the horror of that on his face. He just kind of looked around and then hoisted himself up, when most of us would have quietly had a quick chuck, I think. But yeah, a funny scene. I thought Del the funky Homo sapien demon, he was pretty funny.
Yes, no.
And I really liked that it was Castle Storage.
Yes, Castle Storage, which was for those keeping track at home, where John Winchester had his lockup and has appeared in a number of episodes, also famously in, I'm going to forget the name of the episode off the top of my head, 7.22, Wiki, open up a bit quicker so I can appear to be really, really smart here. There Will Be Blood? No, Survival of the Fittest, inside Sam's head when Castle Storage appears there. I'm sure we have an entry for it on the wiki, and if not, we will by the time the podcast gets posted. So, yes, if you're looking for somewhere to store your kidnapped people or your
mythological items,
bags, Castle Storage, the place for you. I'm sure there's a Biggerson's just down the road. So, of course, then we end with Kevin admonishing the boys to basically get over it and get on with it. What did you think of that final? We have, of course, that, you know, Sam, you know, says, yes, great idea. And then as Dean turns to him, Sam's already left the room.
Weirdly, I really loved that whole scene. Just stepping back a bit too, I really liked the scene between Mrs. Tran and Dean as well, when she, knowing what the risks were, took Kevin home because that was her job. It was her job to protect him no matter what, no matter what the outcome, no matter what the risk. And I thought that was really interesting for her to stand there in front of Dean and say that to Dean, who basically does exactly the same thing in relation to Sam. So I was not sure whether, you know, how to read that, but I was like, ooh, interesting, because that's basically what Dean always does. And, you know, he'll just do it regardless of what he knows might be a bad outcome or what the risk might be for all of concern, but he has to protect his brother. And, you know, well, I think we've probably spoken about how, you know, that's a parental thing for Dean as much as a brotherly thing. Yes. And Mrs. Tran was doing exactly the same thing with Kevin, knowing and having been warned that this may not be the best move forward to take her son. But she's like, what else can I do? He's my son, and it's my job for the rest of my life to protect him any way that I can. And I was like, yeah, see, and that's how Dean thinks.
However, at least in this case, we did have, you know, Kevin was...
Dead,
but he was also...
willing.
You know, consenting.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. I was kind of like, ooh, how do I read this scene? But, you know, like, for Dean, that's exactly how he thinks as well.
Well, and I think it's, you know, again, we talk about it's something many other characters have had to face, is this, you know, it feels right to me, but is it right in the long run? And, you know, in 6 months' time, as, you know, Kevin's ghost is you know, going crazy, and it may even become a threat to Linda Tran or those around her, then maybe it will, you know, not be the right decision. Of course, at the moment, you know, it's difficult to judge, because, of course, your heart's telling you one thing and, you know, your head may tell you something else. And particularly given that knowing that really it's going to happen no matter what at the moment, given that heaven's closed off. So
yeah, exactly.
There's sort of a different situation there. But anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Sorry, yeah. No, Kevin's... I mean, I think a lot of people saying he was like, basically speaking for the fandom and... sort of saying, you know, get over it. I personally don't want them just to get over it. So for me, I was like, no, don't just get over it. Work it out. That would have been a much better turn of phrase to use, I think, than just, hey, guys, you know, stop it. I think he was right when he was saying that you guys, you've got each other. Look at me, I'm dead. And I'm like, yes, you know, you're alive and you've got each other. And this is actually a really good thing. You may not be able to see that right now, but it is actually a really good thing. And can somebody please go out and watch the sunrise or something so that they can remember that it's kind of awesome to be alive regardless. I do want them not to get over it. So when Sam walked away, I kind of liked that whole interaction when he walked away and Dean was like, okay, yeah, you know, yep, okay, and sort of walked out. And then Sam hesitated at his door, which I thought was absolutely brilliant, because, you know, obviously everything's going into Sam's head and he's thinking about everything. And I loved that hesitation so much. But they kind of were a little bit like teenagers going into their rooms and putting on their headphones and whatever. But, yeah, look, I don't want them to get over it. So for me, it was like, okay, you know, then they can't just get over it. They have to somehow work through it. And I don't know how they're going to do that. They don't know how they're going to do that. And I don't know how they're going to do that, because neither of them are very good at using their words. And to actually move forward now will require both of them to swallow some pride and, you know, actually take that step. And that's a really hard thing to do for anybody, but let alone if you're a Winchester. And
well, I think also when I keep coming back to the fact that I don't think either of them
know.
I mean, I think they have some idea of what they have, a vague idea of their own point of view, not necessarily they have an idea of what they want. They have an idea of why their brother's done what they've done, but they cannot see a resolution to bringing those two things together at the moment, as we can't, and as, you know, you can tell from, as you know, said before, the many thousands of words fandom has spent, you know, trying to come up with our interpretation of how it could be fixed. But so I think you're right in, you know, Sam's pause there was an indication, you know, I don't think there's any doubt that both of them want it to be fixed. Oh. But I think they also know, and after all this time together, you know, just over the last, you know, their last decade, if you like, there have been moments when, you know, they've moved forward a bit, but they realise they're stuck, and that, yes, as you say, to just get on with things. And, you know, remembering Kevin, besides being dead, Kevin's, you know, a kid.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's not necessarily, I don't think death confers a great insight necessarily. So I think Kevin's, you know, sort of, you know, just get over it. He is a bit reflective of probably a fandom's desire for them to just get over it, but also a slightly naive one to think that, you know, they can just get on with things.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think that's the thing. I think that's why fandom are so... you know, troubled by this whole thing, is because we can see that the brothers are so troubled by it. They don't know how to fix it. And if they don't know how to fix it, how can, you know, how are they going to fix it? And we don't know how they're going to fix it. So we're getting really stressed and troubled for them because we can't see them making any moves forward. But, you know, I think that the thing is that, like you said, neither of them, I think they both probably kind of know what they personally want, but I don't think they really know what their brother wants or needs, because, you know, only a handful of words have been said, and they've been said, you know, not very clearly and a little bit angrily. And
Dean has an idea of what Sam wants, but it's hard for him to hear it because he has anything to do with separation. And I mean that in the psychological sense, as to do with abandonment and rejection. You know, so he in some ways conflates Sam being autonomous as Sam rejecting him, which is not true. And on the other hand, you know, Sam conflates, you know, Dean's desire to protect him and keep him alive as, you know, as being about removing Sam's agency and autonomy, which it's not about.
It's either. Not about either. And exactly. And neither of them.
They're sort of, yeah. They're stuck.
They're stuck. And they've been stuck like this for a really long time. So that's why I'm kind of super on board with what's going on, because I feel like it's been like, you know, I'm counting on my fingers. I'm doing a Dean Winchester. Like, you know, what, 4.5, 5 seasons or whatever of them butting heads over really exactly the same things over and over and over again. And maybe now it's finally coming to a head, and it's not pretty. And, you know, and it's hurtful for them and way hurtful for us. But, you know, how can you deal with these things without it actually all coming to a point where you have to deal with them, because there's no way forward without actually dealing with them? And I think that's where they've got to. They can't actually, there's no way forward for either of them without actually having to deal with this. They can do their business as usual relationship, but even in that, you know, there's little subtleties of crossing over from just business to brother, and then one of them will snark it back into just business, you know, yes. Dean or something, because, you know, they're now in this kind of very hurt plane where neither of them can see really beyond their hurt and their anger to actually see
that's
past
what they
it.
Need to get over. They need to get over being
hurt and angry. Yeah, they do. They do. And that's what they need to get over. And Dean needs to listen to Sam's words. I think what Sam's words said at the end of the previous episode, The Purge, I think we all understood what he said. Well, I did anyway. I think, you know, we understood him to say, look, he wasn't saying I'm never saving your life again, Dean Winchester. He was saying, you know what, if I knew that is absolutely not what you wanted, and if I knew I had to do something that you goes against everything that you want for yourself and believe in, you know, I wouldn't do that to you. I wouldn't put you in that situation. I wouldn't do that to you. But all Dean heard was Sam doesn't love me enough to save me, he's just going to let me die. And that's all he heard. And so he can't actually hear Sam's words at the moment for the heartbreak in his pounding in his ears. And
we've got another, what are we up to? So we've got another 9 episodes this season. And, of course, the wonderful news we had a couple of weeks ago is that we have season 10 confirmed.
Yeah.
So
I would hope that they've got over this shit by season 10 now. Because I'm going to punch them in the face if they haven't.
Well, of course, the interesting thing is some people have mentioned is whether the Mark of Cain is actually additionally playing a role in this, because we know part of the mythology of Cain is about him being cursed to be without family and wander alone. So there's certainly people speculating that that may be having an added impact on the brothers' relationship. So that may play out through the rest of this season.
That could be something that's, I don't know. I think they're just really angry at each other, but it could be something that's playing into it. But we don't actually really know what the mythology is around the Mark of Cain. We only know what the biblical mythology
yes.
is. And the show has already turned that one on its head for, you know, like has changed Cain's reasoning for killing Abel. So we've already changed up the mythology for the Mark of Cain. So we don't actually know that the show is going with the traditional mythology
It usually doesn't, but it'll be interesting, I think, to see when the Mark sort of starts to come back into play. We've got a lot of balls up. Well, we don't. The writers have. There's a lot going on at the moment. We've got the Crowley and Abaddon conflict. We've got the Mark of Cain. We've got Metatron, Gadriel, and Heaven being closed. Castiel's role in that. The boys' role in all of those things and their relationship. So I think we've got a hell of a lot to come in the rest of this season. So 9 more episodes to go. The finale will be on May the 18th.
18th, is it? Oh,
that's 20th, sorry.
20th,
May the 20th. And, of course, coming up in episode 20, we have the backdoor pilot for the spin-off series, of which there's been a lot of
cast
announced. So you can visit the Supernatural Wiki page on Supernatural Tribes to catch up with who's been cast as who on that. We should also mention it was Jensen's birthday yesterday, or March the 1st,
wherever this podcast ends up. Yep.
Happy birthday, Jensen.
Happy birthday, Jensen.
I made you a cake, but I eaten it. what else do we have to mention? I did want to mention Slates for Sarah. So there was a very sad incident on a film set in Savannah, Georgia last week where a young camera assistant was killed during the filming of a movie, and it led to a movement on social media called Slates for Sarah, where film and TV productions across the US and Canada took photos of their slates, which are the things that are used to mark the beginning of a scene, this woman Sarah Jones' name on it. And you know, a reminder that often a lot of filmmaking involves, you know, risk, and that there can be injuries. And in this case, there were nearly 10 people injured. They were filming on a railway line where they actually didn't have permission to film on the railway line, and and this young woman lost her life. There's been a call for her to be remembered in the in memoriam at the Oscars tomorrow night, because, of course, the film crews are rarely acknowledged in any awards ceremony, and that these people are responsible for making all the TV and movie that we enjoy. And it was lovely to see, Supernatural posted their own photo of the camera department at Supernatural along with Jared and Jensen and with their Slate for Sarah. So I think a good reminder that not only a lot of hard work, but often risk and unfortunately what seems to be unnecessary risk in this case, can go into the making of our entertainment. So I hope that, both there is some acknowledgement of this at the Oscars tomorrow night. Mm. And, yes, then to end on a happier note, We have, as I said, Amy will be off for the start of Vegas Con in a 2 weeks' time. So we'll be expecting, once you get back, Amy, lots of reports of all the shenanigans.
Oh my God. Yes, I'm looking forward to it. I'm doing Chad's ghost tour as well on the Thursday night, so that should be really interesting. I'm a bit scared. He's going out to Bonnie something ranch or something, apparently the most haunted place in, I don't know, Vegas. And
I thought that was the most famous brothel in Vegas. Anyway,
yeah, I think it was, wasn't it? Wasn't it a brothel
the
or something?
Bunny Ranch, yes, anyway.
Bunny Rig Ranch or something. Anyway, I think it was. But anyway, it's supposed to be really haunted or something. So, yeah, doing that on the Thursday night. So that should be interesting. And this is the first con as well with the cabaret, I think, isn't it? Or did you have a cabaret?
Yes, or
did
this is replacing the Saturday night cocktail party. There's now
No, they actually still have the cocktail party.
Oh, okay. So there's going to be a cocktail party and
after that.
I don't know, Misha's singing cabaret numbers or
something. Yeah, well, Misha's the only one currently on the slate, but I'm sure there'll be other people. But yeah, Misha is going to be wowing us with his cabaret skills, for goodness sake. So yeah, it's going to be good. And yes, I'll have things to say. And it'll be great, actually, to one thing I am really looking forward to is, of course, seeing The Voice. But I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to say about the season so far. And, you know, I'm sure there'll be fans who, you know, bring up plot points and things around the brothers' relationship. And I'm sure of it.
Let's get down to it, Amy. What you really want to know is, does Jensen still have the beard of Fields?
I do want to know that desperately because we're actually calling it Rangacon 2014. And, yes, we're all hoping that the beard of Fields is well and truly in place. But we're so torn on that one, though. Selfishly, we want the beard of Fields, but for Sam and Dean, we want him to be clean-shaven. So, so torn. But, yeah. Sorry. But yes, I will have things to say and I'll try and keep them intelligent.
Oh, we want passion and obsession as well as insightful commentary, Amy. It may take a while for you to sober up and recover from Vegas.
My gosh, it's going to be pretty. And I gave up coffee a while ago, so I'm a little bit scared about that. How do you do a convention without coffee?
All forms of caffeine?
What else? Where's caffeine else in?
Well,
in
you know,
booze?
There are many. Well, there are other drinks that have caffeine.
No, caffeine. No, I gave it up. But I haven't given up booze. Someone said, we can have coffee and vodka. And I said, well, I can do the vodka.
Well, we look forward to it. So we've got one more, just so people are clear on the schedule for Supernatural. There's an episode coming up this week. There's then going to be a repeat. Then there's going to be another new episode. Then there's going to be a couple of weeks off. So there's going to be a couple of little hiatuses. This, of course, is all about fitting the schedule so that the finale airs during Mace's week, which is a big ratings period in May. So as I always say to people, don't get frustrated with the hiatuses because it just means that new Supernatural is on our TV longer.
This is true. It means the season goes a bit longer, and our season goes even longer because ours is 23 episodes. So
Yay!
Our show finishes a week after everybody else's. All the other shows on the CW finished the week before. So, woo!
So lots to look forward to, what with the pilot for the spin-off and many things happening on the show as well. So this has been Super Wiki, a.k.a. Jules, and her cold medication.
And this has been Amy, a.k.a. Sweet on Dean, and I have not had any cold medication. I'm just always like this. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.